Just King Things Bonusode.
15-second aerial shot of the Bonusode.
I'm looking. This appears to be a 3D model of the Bonusode. That I've seen that exact plumbing fitting. That's in my office in a bin that I use to build little silly things. Oh, I can see it.
You should build Rose Red.
The house that builds itself?
Yes.
I won't be doing that. Okay. Sometimes there's 110 rooms. Sometimes there's 12 rooms. Sometimes it's one big room.
Yep.
Rose Red!
Rose Red! But it would be so cool if you had like a Rose Red and you could like have all your little goblins and whatnot on there. I don't know. Who are you playing in Warhammer these days?
The goblins.
Okay.
I think you're referring to Scragrot the Loon King.
Exactly.
Are you referring to Scragrot the Loon King? Perhaps you're referring to Grogribbo.
Grogribbo.
Grogribbo, the guy I made up just now.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. I don't play Warhammer. I just buy the models and paint them, you know?
Okay, that's good.
Rose Red.
Rose Red.
Which came out in 2002.
Mm-hmm.
Three episodes.
Mm-hmm.
Three, what, 90-minute episodes?
Yep.
Probably on television 2 hours. Maybe even 2.5 hours?
Yeah, I don't know.
With,
I
like, think commercials maybe, in there?
I think maybe 2 hours. Because it was over 3 nights.
Yeah, but 90 minutes on TV.
Yeah.
You know, that might be 2.5 hours.
Maybe.
I don't know.
Huh.
The, it came out on, what channel here?
ABC.
ABC. And I thought for sure while watching this, this was, or before watching, I was like, oh, it's probably one of these Rick Garris, the devious Rick Garris getting all that work, stealing the name of Mick Garris.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? I'm here and I'm going to say it at this point. You ready? I'm going to say something controversial.
Okay.
Just King Thing Bonusodes. The only Stephen King based bonus episode podcast that Mick Garris is not invited to.
Not invited.
We will never speak to Mick Garris.
Mm-mm. Not at all.
His assistant guy,
uh-huh,
who went on to use Mick Garris's name and Twitter account on the Devil's platform, who went on to use it as like blatant promotion for himself.
Yeah.
And who is known mostly now for just complaining about reviews, I believe.
It is, I don't know. I haven't followed up.
Well, all you got to do is go to the Postmortem with Mick Garris X account.
Uh-huh.
And you can see what that thing's being used for now.
Okay.
And it's not Postmortem with Mick Garris, because you know what doesn't exist anymore? Postmortem with Mick Garris.
Yeah, that ended.
That ended. And now, because of that, we have to formally sever ties with Mick Garris, who never answered our emails.
That's right. Bye, Mick.
Bye, Mick. Friendship with Mick Garris over. Friendship with Craig R. Baxley begins. Because I've seen Rose Red now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Had you seen
Rose Red I've before? I've seen Rose. I watched Rose Red when it first aired, man.
Tell me about it.
So this is 2002.
What in blue blazes? I'm so sorry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I know that I just prompted you to speak and I started reading something.
That's right.
And I got, did you look at the other stuff that Craig R. Baxley has done?
Yes. Yeah.
Haven't we done this? We had to have done this before because he did Storm of the Century.
I mean, probably, yes. We probably talked about it then.
But I guess I've forgotten.
Yeah, I don't remember talking about it because it's just one of those facts that lives in my head that Craig R. Baxley, who was the stunt coordinator under Mick Garris on a few productions, stepped into the director's seat for Storm of the Century and Rose Red. And also Kingdom Hospital.
Stephen R. Baxter was the stunt coordinator for Predator. He made the Predator do the work, do the predating.
Craig R. Baxley. You called him Stephen R. Baxter.
Stephen, who's Stephen R. Baxley? This is like, what was it, Mark Carney the other day? That I was like, who is that? Who's Stephen Baxley? Stephen Baxley. Who is this? No one.
Oh, yeah. So
is Stephen Baxter someone? Stephen Baxter is someone. He's a science fiction author.
He wasn't just a stunt coordinator for Predator. He was the second unit director.
Oh, he was. Well, that was probably for the stunts.
No, okay. Yeah, that makes sense, actually.
Stunt coordinator, colon, second unit. So hard to... But yeah, I don't know.
With a movie like Predator, I guess your second unit is maybe all stunts, yes.
Yeah, that's why, yeah, because you're a stunt crew. Hard to know, right?
Yeah.
Hard to believe that Predator had a second unit, honestly. He was stunt coordinator for Freebie and the Bean, the TV series?
Oh, the love beloved Freebie and the Bean.
Freebie and the Bean. People love the Bean and Freebie. Stunt coordinator for MASH. Stunt coordinator for the Warriors. Stunt coordinator for the Bionic Woman. Wonder Woman. He was a stunt driver for Close Encounters of the Third Time. He probably drove erratically into that government blockade. You remember that part?
Yeah.
Wow. What a career. But as you said, he stepped into the director's seat with a couple things. Left Behind 3, World at War, Kingdom Hospital, which we will get to at some point. Rose Red.
Mm-hmm.
Twilight Man. Storm of the Century. Deconstructing Sarah. What's that movie, Boxing Helena?
Oh.
You know that movie?
Yeah. What about
by,
it?
By David Lynch's daughter?
Yes.
Well, the English guy from this movie is in that movie. He's the doctor guy.
Huh. Oh. Julian Sands.
Yeah.
Yes, that's what you mean. Yes.
I just maybe the title here, Silencing Mary, Deconstructing Sarah. Boxing Helen, you know.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I get you now. Yes.
And he also directed Action Jackson.
Okay.
Which is the Carl Weathers, spoof film.
So he's done a lot.
The man has done a lot. Is he still alive? Yep.
Yep. Looks
76.
Like it.
Wow.
Yeah.
How about that? Okay, mm-hmm. I'm so sorry. You watched this on television when you were a tween.
Yep. No, this was 2002. So this was like, this was probably like one of the primary events of my early Stephen King fandom involvement. Like I remember discussing this on the listservs. There was a big promotional push behind this movie. There was like a, not, it wasn't really quite an ARG, but there were a lot of like fake websites that gave you like the history of Rose Red. Like this was all over the place in the early 2000s. But yeah, like a website that you went to that was, it posed as one of like, you know, the many ghost stories websites that existed back then. Before like things started getting centralized on the internet, you could just like search for ghost stories and you could find a billion people's like random, here's my collection of like ghost stories from this or that area page. So there were a couple of pages like that, I think, that were like presented as being like fan made pages about Rose Red, which was described as like this real mansion, blah, 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 blah.
Mm-hmm.
So I just remember being involved in all of that. I remember watching it on TV and I had this on DVD when it came out and I watched it a couple more times and I watched, this was also like when we first got a DVD player and I watched all the special features. Sidebar. We used to have special features in this country.
We used to have special features in this country. We still have special features. They're just bad.
I got
YouTube shorts, you know?
Well, for Shell by Genre, the show where you, I, and Austin Walker talk about various types of genre literature, right. We're currently doing Lord of the Year.
Uh-huh.
And for our bonus episodes on the Lord of the Rings films, I bought the theatrical cuts on the new Blu-ray.
Mm-hmm.
Because I have a Blu-ray player and I'm like, yeah, I like having these movies in my back pocket to watch. I don't need to stream these.
Yeah.
So new, beautiful new transfers to the Blu-ray, whatever, you know, and it's a Blu-ray, can hold hours and hours of content. It only has the fucking theatrical trailers.
Really?
And I know that there are like various reasons why the special features don't perpetuate, but like, yes, right? Like it is the movie and then the theatrical trailers for the movies.
How disappointing.
Yeah. So I watched all the special features for Rose Red. I don't remember a whole lot about them, but it was really fascinating. Like this was, I think you've talked about this, right? This was like kind of how I got started thinking about how movies are made by watching people talk about, in the case of Rose Red, right? Talking about a lot of like how they pulled off effects shots and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say it is possible that this movie just holds a very special place in my heart, and I'm very, very fond of it, and I'm not a wholly objective respondent in this case, but sitting down to watch this movie, I love this movie. I didn't know what was going to happen, but I still think this movie's great. I maybe don't think it's great in quite the same way or for the same reasons that I did when I was younger, but I find it truly delightful. There's so many things here that I think are just so fun.
I think like just pure over under, the movie's good.
Yeah, it's just, okay,
it
good.
It suffers from like what most of these of this era of Stephen King stuff from the 90s, the late 90s, early 2000s does, which is it's just too long.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like I think it's a pretty good movie. I think there's a really, really good movie that's 2 hours and 15 minutes long.
Yes.
Because it's 3 nights. So it's a 3-part series. It's a 3-night event, you know, in the classic parlance. And because it's a 3-part event, there's a lot of spending time at the beginning of each of them spinning up what has already occurred.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of scenes because, you know, better than now, but still pretty bad for the time. They just don't trust that you know or remember anything.
Mm-hmm.
And so every scene where this movie is like restating the stuff we already know is painful.
Yeah.
But every scene where there's a college professor who is an evil parapsychologist cackling is good. You remember over in the other, in the mainline episode when I was like, hey, everything that all these authors write about college is always about people sleeping with students.
Mm-hmm.
And like, that's a boring trope. Like, come on, you know, get a new joke, get a new thought. But number two, there's way worse shit. I mean, not worse, but there's other bad shit, I guess, is the best way to say that. There's just bad shit that's like horrifying in terms of what you could use to put into a horror story, right? Like, and Steve's already done it before. I didn't think about this at the time, but I've been thinking about this. Which is like The Crate, right? You remember that?
Oh, right. Yeah.
That guy getting like, you know, ashamed in his department because his wife is like a little loud and rude and a little horny.
Yeah.
You know, and like there's all this like awful shit going on with that that like, you know, is like messing him up and he's like a real like kooky guy, you know, all this stuff. He's bad.
Mm-hmm.
That's good stuff. That's also real. That's so real.
Yes.
And you know what's also real? Department chair who's a huge asshole.
Uh-huh.
And is trying to destroy your career. But guess what? You're also a nightmare.
Yeah.
You're bad too. Two of the worst people you've ever met fighting to the death in a haunted mansion. It's cool.
So I can now say this. There is at some point in one of the very early mainline episodes, and I don't remember specifically which one, but I mean very, very early, like within the first maybe 6 episodes or something. I remember a bit where you are talking about Stephen King villains.
Mm-hmm.
And something in the book we read prompted this, but you say something along the lines of, now in the future, Stephen King villains get like really weird and they start they become these kinds of like weird creatures who like self-mutilate or whatever. And I didn't know what you were thinking of specifically, but I immediately thought of the scene in this movie when she has cut her hand or whatever and like corners the department chair and starts rubbing the blood all over his face in front of everyone. And it's like
it's
the
so
most.
Cool. It's such a cool thing to do, to be like, I'm an evil, weird woman.
Yes.
And I stood up. Later on, something weird, like some bad shit's happening, and it cuts over to her, and she just cackles. She's like, I was like, I love an evil, weird woman. Yes. Let more women be evil and
like,
weird.
Yeah, at the end of the second part, where it's like cutting between all of the various plot lines and showing how everyone is in trouble, but she's just like walking around the house with her like EVP equipment or whatever, taking readings, and she's like, it's so good.
Every part of it's good. I love it. It's perfect. She's mm-hmm. great.
Yeah, Nancy Travis is like, she's rocking it. And it makes me really appreciate also what she was doing in the Mr. Mercedes TV series. Because it's like, oh yeah, that's acting. Like, you're two completely different people in these two completely different shows.
I feel like she should have also been in Virtual Obsession.
Yes, you know she would have done great in Virtual Obsession.
If we could go back, people, if you haven't listened to that episode, it's a Shelved by Genre bonus episode. No, it's a mainline episode that we did.
Yeah.
For Shelved by Genre. It's one of our Hallmark interludes that we like to
uh-huh.
do. And I think that was a, you know, whatever. I don't think it was Hallmark. Maybe a Lifetime film. It doesn't really matter. You can go listen to that. I'm pretty sure it's free. It's over on the Shelved by Genre feed. It's called Virtual Obsession. It is about... Man,
it's a Mick Garris film.
It's a Mick Garris film about man what fall in love with a computer.
Uh-huh.
And that movie has only become more prescient by the day.
Uh-huh.
As Richard Dawkins walks his way into pure AI derangement.
Oh. I love yes. it. Yes, he does.
I mean, I don't love it. It's bad for the world. But there's something affirming in the world that's like Richard Dawkins was wrong in the 70s. He was wrong in the 80s. He was wrong in the 90s. In the 2000s, for some reason, he turned into the patron saint of internet atheists.
Mm-hmm.
He was still wrong. And then he continued to be wrong up until this very day when he is, I'm checking my watch, wrong.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Good. Good stuff. Good index. The Richard Dawkins Index. Are you agreeing with Richard Dawkins? Perhaps you should check the temp on that, you know?
Please don't take the honey onto the plane.
I mean, evil.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I can't believe they did that.
Mm-hmm. I also always think of his... He was like, what if we, like, beamed what was it? It was like... romantic affirmative pornography into the Taliban or something.
I mean, I don't know about that, but that sounds right.
It was like a thing he said on Twitter back in the day. He was like, what if we do this and we confront them with like loving pornography and that will destroy misogyny in Islam.
That sounds like Richard Dawkins.
It's what a mind.
Well, that truly what a mind.
Mm-hmm.
But Richard Dawkins, unfortunately, not in this. But yeah, there's a lot of great people, including Nancy Travis. So do we want to do our cast walkthrough really quickly?
Yeah.
Before we talk about the thing, I mean, big picture. If you're looking for like a what the heck is Rose Red about? I don't know why it was made. I just kind of assumed you would explain that.
Mm-hmm. I could.
Yeah, we'll cut over to that in just a minute before we get into discussing the high points, low points, whatever. But biggest pitch is like, there's a parapsychologist professor. Rose Red is the most haunted building in America.
Mm-hmm.
She wants to go prove that hauntings is real and psychic phenomenon. For Diana. She wants to prove it's all real.
Mm-hmm.
So she's going to take as many psychics as can fit in a 9-passenger van. And they're going to go to Rose Red. And they're going to get objective, true, real, actual, factual data. And it's going to, like, save her job. It's going to make her famous. She's going to get a book deal.
Mm-hmm.
And 5 tenure-track jobs.
Yes.
By the way, her research is so bad, they stripped tenure from her, which is like, you know what I mean? Like, we're living in a world where that's pretty hard to do. It had to be real bad.
Uh-huh.
It was super protected back then.
Yes.
They go in. They got all these psychics. Slowly but surely, people start getting consumed / zombified by Rose Red. And then eventually, the powers of an autistic girl are turned against Rose Red, and it is destroyed in a strange mimic of the very first scene in the whole series.
Mm-hmm.
The end.
The end. So yeah, that's Nancy Travis as Dr. Joyce Reardon. Next up in our cast list is Steve Rimbauer, played by Matt Kiesler. He is her...
But before we go to that, yeah. What else is she in? Like Nancy Travis?
Nancy Travis?
Yeah, what else is she... Like, what else would people know her from?
Well, you know her from Mr. Mercedes.
Yeah, but anything...
She plays Bill Hodges' wife.
She's in Tales from the Dark Side?
I haven't seen Tales from the Dark Side in forever, so I don't know.
That was more of a statement than a...
Oh, okay. Like, I was going to say, that's a...
She was in okay. Three Men and a Baby. You remember that? You remember, that's
remember
a haunted movie.
A baby.
That's a movie yeah. with a ghost in it.
That's true. That's true.
She was also in Three Men and a Little Lady.
Yeah. She was the mom, I guess.
She was in Chaplin?
She was in So I Married an Axe Murderer.
That's a cool movie. I like that movie. I don't know if it's good. Anyway, she's in there.
Uh-huh.
All right, who else we got?
Matt Kiesler, who...
This guy can act his ass off, Michael.
Yeah.
He's good in the show. He's the only person when they're like delivering rhymes or rhymes.
Yeah. They have a rap battle.
Now, listen here. I'm in the haunted house. Everybody knows you got to be quiet as a mouse because the ghosts are going to get you and you're going to get hurt. Everybody knows you'll end up in the dirt. Hit Aww. It.
Yeah, so that's what he does.
Yeah, he does like a huge amount of that.
Yeah.
No, he's the only person in the, like, I think this movie's pretty good, but I will say most of it, like, sounds like people just reading lines, you know, uh-huh. like it's real, just like TV drama stuff.
Yeah.
Many of the lines that are read by characters pretty clearly do not apply to the person cast as that character. And so it creates a very odd friction. A la Emery, who clearly is written as a fat man.
Yes.
And is not.
Yes.
So none of the zinger, none of the like fat phobic nonsense of the 1990s and the early 2000s, as if it's gone. I say that yeah. as like, you know, yeah. thank God Obama abolished it. Fat phobia doesn't happen anymore. But you know, like the way he is written is as if he is a very much larger man than he is.
Yes.
And so some of it's like, they surely are reading the words, but this guy, this Kiesler fella, he says the stuff and I say, he's funny. He's like a cool yeah. guy.
He feels like very genuine in this role.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, did you see he's retired from acting?
That's okay.
Yeah.
What's he doing now?
Well, I mean, he retired from acting because he had trouble getting work acting, but I guess he is, what did it say?
He was Fade Rotha.
Yes, in the Dune miniseries.
Yeah, how much bad times could he have, Fade Rotha?
Yeah. He works in science now. Oh, he's a practicing physician assistant.
He went to PA school?
Yeah. Cool. He's an instructor of urology at the Oregon Health and Science University School of Medicine.
Can you imagine if you walked in the class and like the wise cracking boyfriend plus inheritor?
Mm-hmm.
From Rose Red was talking to you about urine.
If I had gone that track, if I walked in and he was my professor, I'd be like, oh, you're Steve Rimbauer.
And he's of urology in particular. So he's like, and some dicks do this. You know, I guess that's yeah. what they're talking about. You know, I think that's the, you got to keep it light in that classroom. Uh-huh. I think mm-hmm. keep it too clinical. No one pays attention. I don't think I could handle it.
Yeah. No, so yeah, he's the inheritor of the Rose Red Mansion, which was built by his like great 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 grandfather or something, who was like an oil tycoon, and he is younger than Dr. Reardon, and she may just be it's an interesting little scenario, right? Because she's this older woman, and he is clearly into her, but she seems to be using him because. She just wants to go to Rose Red.
Yeah. Let evil women be in shows, Michael. She has seduced him.
Yep.
In order to get access to Rose Red. That's it.
Yep.
It's evil shit. It's great. It's cool. Yeah.
So he comes along for the ride. And you know what? He may just be a little psychic.
He's hella psychic. No one's ever gone from 0 to 60 like this guy.
Yeah.
Steve Rimbauer.
Yep. No, he's got the he's got kind of like the Ben Mears backstory, where once when he was a little kid, he went up into the attic, like he was wandering around Rose Red. And Rose Red, allegedly, you know, the stories go that people disappear there. I mean, that's not alleged. That literally happens. But like the
you're saying alleged, like Rose Red's going to sue us.
Right. Hallways and stuff move around, right? Like you get lost really easily. The house seems to reconfigure itself. And so when he was a little boy, he somehow ended up in the attic, and he has this like repressed memory of meeting the ghost of Ellen Rimbauer, who was the wife of the initial builder. And we'll talk more about her, I guess, later. But that's Steve.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yep.
We got this guy, David Dukes. I'm gonna skip
most of the cast.
Annie, and then I wanna get some of the not so interesting. We got David Dukes in here,
mm-hmm.
who's playing the evil department chair.
Yes.
And he's so evil, he's like running around, he's sicking the student newspaper on people. You mm-hmm. know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
He's not getting sued. There's a very famous let's say editor who seemingly has done many of this stuff before. You know, I mean, it's kind of based on real people if you think about it. But he's zooting around using Rawhead Rex.
Yeah.
Using sliders. Speaking of sliders, talking about sliders mm-hmm. the other day.
Yeah. This actor unfortunately passed away during filming.
That's unfortunate because he did play Bib Fortuna in the radio drama of Return of the Jedi. Did you know that?
No, I didn't.
Important information.
Yeah, I love what he does in this, because what is it? There's like the shitty student newspaper reporter who he's like, you know, sicking on Reardon and everything.
Yeah,
and
so there's the McPoyle brother. What's that guy's name? Jimmy Schmitz, something like that. Jimmy Simpson.
Yes,
Jimmy the actor Simpson. Jimmy Simpson, the famous actor Jimmy Simpson, is in this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, famously one of the guys who got shot in Zodiac.
Uh huh.
He was in Westworld, a bunch of episodes of Westworld. Mm-hmm. And of course, there's a McPoyle brother. He's in here as evil college reporter.
Mm-hmm. So there's that bit where David Dukes like drops him off. And what does he say? He's like, because the reporter, his name is like Bullinger or whatever. He's like, what? He's asking for help or for direction or something. And David Dukes is just like, courage, my boy, courage, from the car as he like pulls away from the curb.
It's great. Like, he knows that he's playing a silly character and he just goes for it.
Mm-hmm.
I love it. Then we got what? All the psychics, basically?
Yes. Well, psychics and like their accessory persons.
We got Emily Deschanel?
Yep.
That's her?
Yeah.
Zoe Deschanel's sister?
Yep.
What?
Yeah.
Well, she plays, I forget what her superpower is. So something that you mentioned before is like that one guy has like a Ben Mears story.
Uh-huh.
And that's because this is, it's a like a, you know, a classic Stephen King combinatoric squished together.
Mm-hmm.
So it's basically just like anyone who's ever been psychic, they're just back.
Yeah.
And so, but I don't remember what her power was. Do you?
She, she's the one, she's like, they call me a touch note. Like she touches right. an object and she knows like sort of like what happened recently or who was holding it and how they were feeling and that sort of thing.
Yeah. There's a great scene where they all go around and like explain their powers and use them a little bit. It's so good.
Yes. I love that. They're like hanging out in the bar after, because like Joyce gets them all together at the university to like deliver a lecture where she just like tells the entire like history of the house. And then they go out for drinks later. And I love that scene. Yeah.
Yeah, it's really good.
They're just like getting to know each other.
So, yeah, Emily Deschanel is there playing Pam Ashbury. Victor Kandinsky is there by Kevin Tai, I think is that guy's name.
Yeah.
He's the guy who owns the eponymous Roadhouse in the film Roadhouse.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like a religious guy. I don't remember what his power is either.
He He sees the future.
Just straightforwardly.
Yes, because his when he shows off in the bar, he says something. He like describes a couple that's getting ready to walk by.
That's right. He's like, right. He's got Roman hands and Russian fingers.
Yes.
You see this a guy like grabbing a butt, doing the most lascivious thing you can do on television.
Right.
In 2002 or whatever.
He's also got to take heart medication, I think. I think that's what that is.
Yeah, probably taking the, I was going to say nitrous, but that's not.
It's nitroglycerin.
Yeah, there you go. Nitroglycerin. He should take nitrous. That would be cool. Show would be quite different.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So that's him. He's like an older dude. And Emily Deschanel is like, obviously she's Emily Deschanel. So she's younger, young, pretty lady. Julian Sands as Nick Hardaway. And he is just like generally empathic or psychic or whatever. Cause he's he's the one who kind of knows something's up with Joyce.
Yeah, he plays Julian Sands plays the coolest guy in the show.
It's kind of the thing Julian Sands did. Is he just showed up to be like a cool person.
Really did. I did you look up how Julian Sands died?
No.
He passed away. He got lost in the mountains.
Oh.
And died there.
I knew he passed away. Oh, just 2 years ago. I remember that. I did not realize this was how it happened.
I didn't either.
Wow.
Sad to hear. It's not a way to go.
Yeah.
But yeah, he did. Very deeply tragic.
Yeah.
And also just a talent. Because I recently watched, rewatched. I mean, I've seen it a bunch of times. The David Cronenberg Naked Lunch.
Mm-hmm.
And he plays Eve whatever in that. Burroughs, Bill Lee, like duplicate guy who shows up.
Mm-hmm.
He's very funny in it. I can't believe that's happening. You know, like that kind of
yes.
Thing. No, I can hear it. But he's really good. He is if there is a male protagonist in this thing who's not an evil woman. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like if there's a protagonist in here who's not an evil woman, it's him.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of like making stuff happen and like trying to solve problems and helping people out.
Yeah. Yep. He's like, and I guess if you haven't watched this or haven't watched along, this is important. He is English. So I don't remember if we said that. So that's also part of why he seems very cool, because he's like this very suave, svelte looking English dude. He's got an accent and he seems mysterious. He's one of those Englishmen who had kind of had an elfin quality about them, right? Mm-hmm. He could have been hanging out in Lothlorien.
Yeah.
Matt Ross as Emery Waterman.
Another main character for reasons I won't understand. He's kind of an Ed Deep, no?
A little bit. He's also kind of a version of grown up Danny Torrance, right? Yeah.
Uh-huh.
This is the other thing, actually. This is the thing that I want to bring a conversation here. He is actually clearly modeled on a character from a completely different novel, which is Hell House by Richard Matheson.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember the character's name, but this movie, unsurprising to longtime listeners of the show, takes a lot of Stephen King stuff that we're familiar with and just like staples it all together. So there's mm-hmm. a little bit of The Shining in here in terms of how Rose Red works. And there's a little bit of this, that, and the other. Weirdly enough, the thing that I noticed is that this movie is also like a prototype for a lot of the ideas that show up again in Dumas Key.
I guess so. Right? Yeah, I didn't think about that.
Right, the dolls, the female villain who's associated with the color red,
mm-hmm.
The sort of like dynamics of how the house feeds on people and whatnot.
It's also like in it, maybe this is where you're going. Tell me if I'm wrong. But
sure.
But it's a bunch of Stephen King stuff that we're familiar with getting scrambled all together.
Yes.
That combinatoric thing. But it's also every popular haunted house horror novel written since 1930.
Yes. So it is also The Haunting of Hill House is right, in yeah. here, right? Like,
yeah.
Right. Parts of it are like evoked very explicitly. And also Hell House by Richard Matheson is bone deep in this thing, because the character of Emery to me seems very clearly based on a character in that novel who the hook for that book is that it is Hell House. It's not really called Hell House. It's called like Belasco House, I think. But they call it Hell House because it's the most haunted house in the world. And a, you know, professor who wants to prove that the paranormal exists or whatever, organizes a trip in to spend the weekend at the house or the week at the house and document phenomena. And he has a bunch of psychics with him. And one of those psychics is a guy who was a child psychic who famously was the only survivor of a seance that was held in the house like 30 years before. And so he's like very bitter and acerbic and like off-putting to all of the other characters around him. But, you know, ultimately like grows and comes around, right? And that's mm-hmm. exactly what is happening with Emery, except Emery has nothing to do with Rose Red. Emery has been a working psychic for most of his life, it seems, and then having to deal with his mother.
The most devious. Who's she played by?
She is played by, where is she? Is she in here? Waterman, Mrs. Waterman.
Is she not? Oh. Waterman. I guess I gotta click all cast and crew.
I was gonna say, it's not listed on
Laura Kinney.
Laura Kinney, who you may know, listener, as the woman who screams forever in that episode of Twin Peaks, The Return.
Oh my God, she right. is.
Yes, when
she's sick!
Yes, when the car gets rear-ended and there's that sick girl, the woman who gets out and is yelling about it. Like, it's that woman. I remember watching Twin Peaks, The Return, and I was like, oh my God, that's Emery's mom.
She's so good in that. That is genuinely one of the most disturbing things.
Mm-hmm.
She's very sick! We have to go! I love it.
And the girl's just, like, puking in the mm-hmm. passenger seat.
Well, she was very sick. She did have to go.
Yeah.
No, I have to tell you, there's some really funny stuff going on here.
Uh-huh.
She was Hog Lady in Cabin Fever.
Okay.
In the remake of Cabin Fever, because there was a remake.
Uh-huh.
She played Crone in Halo 3 ODST.
What?
She is a voice in Putt-Putt Joins the Circus. And she is Mrs. Airbag, Mrs. Widget, and Cartown Car Wash voice in Putt-Putt Enters the Race.
Oh.
She is also in Ranged Touch Classic, Harry and the Hendersons.
Oh my goodness.
It all comes back around.
It does. It always comes back.
What's her first movie role?
Yeah.
I mean, look, she's having to play the like most dog shit Stephen King fucking ass character you've ever seen in your whole life, which mm-hmm. is like evil fat mom.
Mm-hmm. Annie Wilkes, but she's your mom.
Richie's mom from mm-hmm. It.
Yes. The Lee Harvey Oswald's mom.
Lee Harvey Oswald's mom. You know, it buns evil women. You go, I guess that's her one redeeming trait, is she is evil.
Yes.
At least she's got something going on.
Mm-hmm.
Mrs. Carmody, that lady from Salem's Lot who like looks through the blinds.
Mm-hmm.
Probably also a lady who looks through the blinds in Needful Things. Isn't there one of them in there too?
Yeah, sure. Why not?
She's got like the magic TV. Is that not her? Was she looking at the soaps or something? I can't remember.
I don't remember.
It's been years since we read that book.
It's been so long. We've been recording for so long.
We have. But, we've documented these characters that have come along. It's been a minute since we've had one, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
By going back to 2002, you get to kind of go back into an earlier era of Steve. But she's doing all that. Now, let me say, number one, that sucks. Like, just big concept.
Mm-hmm.
But within the parameter of, if it exists, do you do a good job? You know what I mean? Like when you make a World mm-hmm. War II thing, someone's got to play Hitler.
Yeah.
And then you kind of want the person who plays Hitler to do a good job.
Yeah.
Right? Like that sucks. Yeah. But also, You know, I'm making gym face here, you know.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. The way you want.
You're looking at the microphone.
I'm making eye contact with the microphone.
Uh-huh.
People at home are going, we feel like him.
Yeah.
People on TikTok are explaining to me that all vocal affectations of all millennials are traced back to Jim. You've seen
That's
this?
Great.
You've seen this stuff?
I have not seen this, but it makes sense to me that they might
like legislate one thing they care about into all of reality.
Mm-hmm.
And that might be the entirety.
You know, it's not as if, I don't know, Jim were being written by a bunch of millennial writers.
How dare you? You absolute fool. Where'd the lighter fluid come from, Michael? You know?
Yeah.
But so within those parameters, I gotta say, she's meant to be evil and annoying and bad. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. I don't like her. And mm-hmm. I think she's evil and annoying and bad. So,
yeah,
mission accomplished.
She's like, my Emmers.
And eventually she just starts screaming.
Yes.
She kind of gets like half possessed by the house.
Uh-huh. She's just like mad and running around.
Yeah. Like she's 19th century mad.
Yeah.
And people know I love that.
Mm-hmm. So that's Mom. And now we've got Matt Ross as Emery, who is, as you say, constantly being described as if he's much fatter than he is. I love what Matt Ross does with this performance.
He's really good, yeah.
Because he just looks, he reads the script and he realizes, oh, okay, this guy is fucking obnoxious. And he like disappears into the character.
Yeah.
Like he's kind of like he's so good at doing like the whiny voice, like it's like puling, like sarcastic. He does
Mom,
kind of like the yes
mother.
He's always like
mother. The credit cards.
There's a little bit of Buster Bluth in there.
There is
Buster Bluth. Buster Bluth is based on Emery Waterman.
No, I think they're contemporaries.
They are contemporaries. That's weird to think about.
I mean, it's like the calculus, you know? Sometimes great minds. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He's like kind of, he like stands around with his, he's very nasal. He constantly is talking he speaks as if he has like a plugged nose, and he keeps his mouth kind of hanging open at all times to kind of accentuate that fact. And it's very funny because I think like, there's two other things that I've seen him in, and one of them was the first season of American Horror Story, mm-hmm. Where he plays a very different character. He plays like a 1920s doctor who like has, you know, gone mad and he's a ghost now. Mm-hmm. And so he's got he's doing like the transatlantic accent, just completely different. And then the other role that I recognized him in is he's in American Psycho as one of Patrick Bateman's coworkers.
He's like the gay panic one.
Yes.
He's the one that they think or is gay. You know, like it's been a minute since I've seen that movie, but he's the gay one, you know,
yes.
For lack of a, you know, better descriptor, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. But everyone's like, he thinks other people are coming on to him, but other people think he's coming on to them, I think is the thing. And so it's that, you know.
Yeah.
What's that? Well, Mary Harron, right? Who directed that?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. One of her delightfully ambiguous, like, what's going on here? What's mm-hmm. What's funny is I've seen him in a bunch of stuff. I was looking, I was like, I know I've recognized this guy, but from what? He is in Face Off.
Oh.
He's in Homegrown, a movie which sucks, but which I've seen a million times. He is a very good character in Last Days of Disco. You ever seen that movie?
No, I haven't.
It's a Whit Stillman movie.
Oh.
I don't know if it's the best Whit Stillman movie, but it's pretty close.
Mm-hmm.
It's really good. I like that film a lot. He is also in, there's something else here that I had seen. Oh, he's the Jeff Bezos guy in Silicon Valley.
Oh, okay.
A show which apparently went on for 5 years, which kind of blows my mind. I didn't know.
Whoa.
That. I saw, I think, the first season of that, but yeah, he's like their the guy they're like going back and forth with that like finances their project to begin with, blah, 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 all that stuff.
Okay.
So yeah, seeing a bunch of things.
Yeah.
He directs stuff now too.
I did see that.
He made Captain Fantastic. with Viggo Mortensen.
Right, yeah.
A widower who lives in the forest takes his 6 children to the outside world for the first time.
Yeah.
And that appears to be Viggo Mortensen.
He wrote and directed this. And it's Viggo Mortensen, Frank Langella, Catherine Hahn, and Steve Zahn.
So, I was doing a little bit of a Little Miss Sunshine, is what it looks like. A little bit. But what Little Miss Sunshine, what if the protagonist was Dr. Teeth from The Muppets? Played by Viggo Mortensen.
That's right.
It looks a little quirky, is all I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
God, I love Catherine Hahn.
She's fun.
I feel bad that they like hoovered her up in into all those Marvels or whatever.
I know. Well, I mean, that's...
I'm glad she got the paycheck. I'm sure they paid her a bunch of money, and I'm glad she got the money. But, like, Catherine Hahn and Step Brothers. I watched Step Brothers, you know, within the past year.
Uh-huh.
And because my very brave wife had never seen it. And I was like, I remember this.
She hasn't.
She had never seen it. Oh, I told you, if it didn't come on TBS between, we've talked about this before, if it didn't come on TBS between like the years 1998 and 2004, she probably did not see whatever movie you're talking about.
Okay.
She just had a very, like, this gives you a sense of, without any additional information, a sense of like what media culture she grew up in and like what that felt like.
We're a TBS household.
They were a TBS household, number one.
Mm-hmm.
But number two is that they once did like a cross-country trip as a family, her family. And in order to entertain the children, her parents purchased a Game Boy, a Game Boy Color.
Uh-huh.
For, like, everyone to share for this. And it's like multiple weeks, maybe, you know, like a several week journey across America, you know? And this is just like something to do on top of reading books, whatever, right?
Mm-hmm.
They played that Game Boy during that trip, and when they got home, it went into a box forever.
Wow.
Until it was given to me after we got married.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, so it was that kind of thing of like, it never even entered into the mind of any of these people that you could play a Game Boy.
Right.
When, just for entertainment in your life.
Right. When you weren't on a trip or something.
Right. Without a special occasion. It's like, oh, we're going to the moon. You know, I guess we need something to keep us occupied for a little while. Give them an astrolabe or something. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm, a little star chart. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So, not really seeking out films.
Uh-huh.
But, so we watched Step Brothers, and Catherine Hahn, in that movie, is so funny. She's extraordinary. If people have not seen that, she's married to Adam Scott, and Adam Scott's, like, the shitty brother to... John C. Riley.
Yeah, John. I couldn't remember if he was Will Ferrell's brother or John C. Riley.
I think he's John C. Riley's brother. I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
Maybe not. Maybe he's the brother one of them. It really kind of doesn't matter. And she is like the stepsister. And the D plot for the film is that she is in love with John C. Riley.
Mm-hmm.
And he like seems completely unknowing about anything, you know, regarding romance in any kind of way.
Mm-hmm.
And so every time they're together, she is just like going absolutely hog wild in every way. Like Catherine Hahn at the height of her powers.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just really funny. It's a funny bit.
Yeah. That is a good movie. That is a fun movie.
And you know what? I got to say, there's a lot of comedies from that time. We've talked about this over on the Homestuck Made This World bonus episodes.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of comedy from that time you can't watch.
Yeah,
because I mean, you can watch it, you can still laugh or whatever, but then you get hit with like the most homophobic thing you've ever seen in your life.
Yeah,
or like the most transphobic thing you've ever seen in your life since that time, or like the most egregious, long running usage of the R word. You know, and you're like, oh dang, we're time traveling. This is 20 years ago. They're doing stuff that was very funny at the time, but reminds us how cruel we were, and how much we've, at least in some ways, come as a culture.
Mm-hmm.
Step Brothers doesn't have too much of that. I'll be honest with you. There's a couple old things, but other than that, it's mostly good old fashioned comedy.
Yeah, I mean, like, yeah, it's a charming movie because it plays the bit that John C. Reilly and Will Ferrell are effectively 8-year-old boys very earnestly.
Yeah, we have so much room for activities, Michael.
Yep,
I got a celebrity update for you.
Okay,
guess which male action hero I was in spitting distance of this morning. I drove down the wrong street. It ended up in the middle of a film set.
Oh, okay.
This is real.
Uh-huh.
I drove down the wrong street and ended up in the middle of a film set, and they were filming a scene, honest to God, I could have hit this dude in the face with a beer bottle. Easy.
Uh-huh.
No question. This is my measurement for how close I am to people, by the way.
Okay, yep. The beer bottle measure, yeah.
The beer bottle measure, which is, it's closer than you think. Previous male action heroes I've been this close to, is it Joe Barenthal? John Barenthal?
Don't know.
Barenthal.
I think John.
The Punisher.
Yeah. I think it's John Barenthal.
I was previously this close to that guy. A couple
okay.
years ago.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So it's not him.
It's not him. I've eliminated okay. one male.
Okay. Do I get any other hints or do I have to pick among all the potential
males? He did
male?
Not kiss a girl when he should have.
He did not kiss a girl.
It was in a fictional context.
Okay.
People were outraged that this male action hero did not kiss the gal when he should have.
Hmm.
And before I saw the movie, I thought, I don't know. People are real upset about this. Who knows? And then I watched the movie and I thought, they were right. He should have kissed that gal.
Hmm. Well, that's not helping me. I'm going to say it's Jason Statham.
You want one more hint?
Give me one more hint.
He's not as good at Tom Cruise at flying the plane, but he ain't half bad.
I actually got two hints out of there by floating Jason Statham and getting that cut out.
Mm. I really gave you one, honestly.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Much like I gave you John Barenthal.
Right. Can't be Val Kilmer.
Not Val Kilmer. But it's close. Mm. Who played the Val Kilmer in the most recent Top Gun film?
Oh, I don't know. I didn't watch that.
It was Glenn Powell. I could hit Glenn Powell in the head with a beer bottle if I wanted to.
Hmm.
Are you Googling Glenn Powell? Right
I'm glue. I am Googling Glenn Powell.
He's very. Do I know who's. Yes, you know him.
Oh, he was the guy who was in The Running Man. Okay,
he's the new Running Man. That's why I'm bringing it up.
Oh, and he was.
I thought that'd be too easy.
Yeah, he's been in a million movies that I have not seen.
You should,
his first movie was Spy Kids 3D Game Over, which was where I dropped off of Spy Kids. I only saw one and two.
You should watch Twisters.
Okay.
Unless it is a Midwesterner, it might panic you too much.
Yeah. Oh, weird.
Did I tell you about driving back through Indiana and I drove through a place where a tornado had gone through? Like in previous tornado season, I was like, what the hell? Why does this all look so fucked up?
You did not tell me about this.
Tornadoes go through here.
Yeah.
Pretty wild.
Yep.
There was like a convenience store all smashed up. I was like, what is this? And I went, oh, yeah, tornadoes.
Oh, yeah, no, truly, I have not seen a single thing that he's in. Oh, he's Fox in the...
Star Fox.
Yeah. Yeah, he's Star Fox in the new Mario movie. Bizarre.
Well, we'll be watching The Running Man soon. Presumably,
I guess we'll have to. Yeah,
I did. I was at Walmart the past couple days, sometime, and they had the 4K of The Running Man and the 4K of Welcome to Derry. And so I feel like we got to hit both of those because we want to know what's happening in Welcome to Derry, right?
I guess so. Yeah,
we want to find out.
We want to find out.
I bet that clown's laughing. He's evil. Hey, let's get back into the show.
Okay,
he's good. Matt Ross is good.
Yeah, Matt Ross is good. Then who we don't have? Oh, okay, Judith Ivy, is a supporting character. She's your aunt or your grandma. She's a nice old lady who does automatic writing.
She's really good. What's kind of cool about her? What I'm about to say is going to sound rude, but I don't mean it to sound rude. I mean it to sound very complimentary. She's kind of an old lady who does automatic writing, who's kind of your grandma.
Mm-hmm.
But she can also kind of get it. She's kind of cute.
Is that what you're saying?
I think so. She's real flirty. You know what I mean?
Oh, okay.
She's giggly and flirty.
She is.
You don't think there's a thing going on between her and Julian Sands here?
Oh, no, there absolutely is.
There's a little deceptive. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
She won the Tony? No. What the hell? She won a Tony twice?
Yeah.
Damn. But I thought she was delightful. Of that introduction scene, when she started talking, I was like, there's actor, there are people who are acting their shit apart in this movie. Because they're like, what do you do? And she's like, I do automatic writing. And they're like, what is that? And she says, well, and then she gives this like very big, I would say like almost 1960s, early 1970s, like style performance. You know, you could imagine, what's her name? This is going to kill me. I can see her face. She had a comedy show. It was up against SNL. SNL eventually drove her off the air.
Carol Burnett?
Carol Burnett. Thank you. Yes. Right. It's a kind of Carol Burnett show kind of performance.
Oh, yes. Okay. Yes, I see exactly. Yes. I get it. Yep.
It's a little stage big. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And like stage big being that in a TV show like this is a little strange, but it really works. She does a great job.
Yeah.
She's still doing it too. She's still acting. She's in a show this year.
Damn.
Cool.
Good for her. Yeah.
And then we've got, I guess, our last two people of note. Melanie Lynskey, who I've been told is now like a queer icon.
That's interesting. I mean,
post Yellow Jackets? Is that true? Can you confirm?
I'm not sure about that. I don't know. I dropped off Yellow Jackets in the second season. She was good in that. I don't have a particular sense of...
I just had someone so confidently assert that at me. And I didn't know what it meant. So I just took it as fact.
I don't know what happened in Yellow Jackets.
Melanie Lynskey is from Pink News. Confirms that gays have better taste.
Okay,
what what?
That's wild. Do you want to know?
I do.
Who she was married to?
I know. Wait, hold on. I do know this. Hold on. God, this is going to kill me. This has happened to me already. I'm reliving my favorite.
Can I give you a hint?
Comeback in style.
Yes. Can I give you a hint?
Give me a hint.
We've already talked about this person during this recording.
Today?
Yes.
Okay, it's not Glenn Powell.
No. That would be cool, though.
It would be cool. Well, I guess. I don't know. Viggo Mortensen.
No.
I don't know.
She was married to Jimmy Simpson from 2007 to 2014. The evil college reporter in this movie.
Melanie Lynskey was married to Jimmy Simpson?
Yes, for 7 years.
What?
She's currently married to Jason Ritter, but like
what? That's bad. I don't know why it was so good. It was, you would not believe the level of confidence that was asserted to me in real life by someone that Melanie Lynskey is a queer icon.
Yeah, but I thought
that meant something in the world today, but it seems like not. She'd be like, she's just nice.
I mean, yeah, she was in But I'm a Cheerleader, so I maybe associate. So the thing,
maybe
here's
that,
what I'll say
yeah,
about
maybe that is part of it.
And in Yellow Jackets, she plays the adult version of a character who clearly has a very complicated relationship with her best friend when they're teenagers and they get stranded in the woods. Right. There's some of the stuff there, but I will also say, I'm sorry, I'm going to spoil Yellow Jackets. Or like the second season. I felt like it was like really going to unwind from the point where I stopped. So I don't know what comes of this, but the best part of Yellow Jackets is, her spending like the entire first season, Melanie Lynskey, building up all of these like secrets and resentments about her humdrum life in suburbia, and her husband, who is kind of a doofus, and she's like having emotional and literal affairs, and like kicking off this weird investigation into like her, you know, childhood cannibal cult, blah, 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 blah. Eventually it rolls around to her husband finding out that she's like had to murder someone in order to keep all, like, you know, obviously things go wrong and she has to start killing people. And her husband finds out and he's like, okay, what do we need to do?
Huh?
And it's just, it's so good because it turns out he's just fucking ride or die for her. He's like, yeah, all right. Like, yeah, this is why I married you.
Cool.
And she has spent all the show, like, you know, despising him. So anyway,
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, Milyalinsky's been in a million cool projects.
Yeah.
Like Young Sheldon.
Uh-huh. Of course.
And The Last of Us.
Uh-huh.
And
The Perks of Being a Wallflower. Coyote Ugly.
She was in White Hot American Summer 10 years later. Funny. There's been a million things.
Mm-hmm.
But here she is playing
There's someone out there who's like, name the cartoon. Talk about the cartoon.
What cartoon? SpongeBob?
No, she was in Over the Garden Wall.
Oh, I thought you were talking about American Dad! Exclamation point.
Yes, also she was an American. So we have a huge American Dad fan base.
We might.
We could.
In the hierarchy of things, American Dad's not the worst. I don't watch it. I didn't enjoy it when it was on, but I've seen enough cartoons to be like, I don't know. Who cares? You know what I mean? It hits the exact level of I don't care.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not true for everything.
Yeah.
As long as I care about.
But yeah, so who is Milyalinsky? In the show, not in real
Melanie
life. We already covered that.
Plays, well, she's in Over the Garden Walls, Beatrice.
Mm-hmm.
Something. I've never seen Over the Garden Wall.
Okay. She's a bird.
Oh, I have seen Over the Garden Wall. There's that little kid who's like, I like eating pumpkins or whatever.
Yes. Yeah. You've got the vibe.
The pumpkin child.
Uh-huh.
She plays Sister.
Mm-hmm.
And iconically, her name is attached to her very sister because she is basically there to mediate between her, in the parlance of 2002, very autistic sister.
Mm-hmm.
Who is, drum roll please, what's
Kimberly
her main
J. Brown?
Quality?
What?
What's her main quality?
Oh, okay. She's Kimberly J. Brown. That's her main quality. No, she's psychic.
She's psychic. She's maybe the most psychic. It's just a rerun at Danny.
Yes.
But like, what if Danny was Stephen King's fixation in the 90s? Psychic.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a rerun of Desperation Kid. Or no, I'm sorry, The Regulator's Kid. But also Desperation Kid, I guess. Same kid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And several other evil characters down the
line. Yeah, the incredibly psychic child who becomes a fixation for some sort of evil entity that can use the child and their abilities to become more powerful.
And what's notable is, yes, Kimberly J. Brown plays Annie Wheaton, and Milyalinsky plays her sister, Rachel Wheaton. And I guess what's notable about Annie Wheaton as a autistic child, a.k.a. like a battery, as far as the King script is concerned, is she's evil.
Yes.
She is an evil child.
Yes.
Just straightforwardly, she was an evil kid.
This is a movie whose point, in as much as it has a point, is the only thing that can defeat evil women is another evil woman.
Is an evil girl.
Yes, an evil
girl.
The
only thing more evil than an evil adult woman is an evil girl child.
Yes.
A villainous girl child. Yeah, I guess like a mad woman and an evil girl child.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like a woman who winks evil. You know what I mean? That's Professor Joyce Reardon.
That is correct.
She's cool. Ugh. It's all, but you know, look, you gotta like, I mean, you don't have to do anything in order to approach this as anything other than a great evil, which I guess mm-hmm. you could. I'm not your boss. You can do whatever you want. You're a listener. You have to just accept that this is like the most fucked up presentation, right? Like,
yes.
Like in the same way that like King has done this many times with basically anyone who is like 0.2% off the cognitive norm.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Stephen King's just throwing your ass under the bus. And that is his maneuver. I neither apologize for it nor make excuses. It simply occurred. And I think what's wild about this is you could do all this without the autistic kid.
Yeah.
Just have an evil little girl.
Yeah.
Little girls are evil no matter what. We all agree. Little girls are evil.
Yeah. And I mean, like, you might sound like we're being flip, but genuinely, like, this is like in as much as this movie has like some thematic interest, and I think what is interesting, or like one of the things that's interesting about this movie, is seeing a bunch of stuff that like that gets set for the ground where I'm like, oh, this would be something I would be keeping an eye on if I were reading the book. Right. Like you can feel the King book structure behind like the way the characters are introduced and kind of like what their situations are and their preoccupations. And then eventually, like, it kind of just becomes a carnival ride. But in terms of like what this thing is setting up and like what are the kind of like themes or questions that hover over it, like this is a movie about female rage. And about like what makes women angry and what they do in response to it.
It's very much the capper to the 1990s Stephen King books about women.
Yes.
That kind of start a little bit before that, I guess, with Misery and end with, what's the last one? Rose Matter, maybe? Is that?
Yeah, maybe Rose Matter.
I mean, formally, probably the last one is
Lisey's Story,
like you talked about.
No, I would say Lisey's Story.
Well, it's not about an angry woman, though.
Oh, that's true.
You know what I mean? Like, I'm thinking about, like,
oh, right. Oh, Dumicky, that's the other
like,
connection.
Evil, mad woman.
Yeah.
Bag of Bones, evil, mm-hmm. mad woman, right? Like,
yes.
It's the ghost there.
Yes.
And then all of the ones that are in the 90s.
Yeah. Huh. But yeah, that like, the movie opens with what the hell's her name? Annie, as a child, and she was recently attacked by a neighborhood dog, and the dog died in some way that is confusing and unclear. It seems like somehow this little girl who's only 8 years old killed the dog, and her neighbors are watching, the elderly neighbors. There's something wrong with that girl. Blah, blah, blah.
Oh, it's even better that she doesn't kill that dog. Those people have to kill their own dog.
They have to put the dog down.
She throws the dog.
Mm-hmm.
And it zips out of frame as if this were shot for 3D. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then they put it down, and there's like a wild scene where the guy's like, here's a strong drink. He's talking to his wife.
Yes.
Here's a strong drink. It's easier to do it if you're drunk. Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
The suburbs come for us all, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But she's not happy with that, Michael. She begins to draw a picture of the house being destroyed by big brown lines, crayon lines.
Mm-hmm.
And then stones fall from the sky, like a Magnolia-esque miracle.
Mm-hmm. Or like Carrie.
That does happen at the end of Carrie.
Yep.
I forgot about that.
And it's a thing that I think happened when Carrie was a kid, like there was a rain of stones on the house. It's also a thing that happened to Eleanor, the protagonist of The Haunting of Hill House. That's why she gets chosen partly for the psychic expedition, because she has this anomalous instance in her background of a rain of stones, I believe.
Really? I didn't know
yep.
that.
Yep.
I think I've just forgotten.
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
Yeah, so little Annie uses her psychic rain of stones to destroy the neighbor's house. Flash forward. We need to get this girl into Rose Red, says Nancy Travis.
Yeah, we got to get up there. The best parts of this movie are Nancy Travis just telling like rippers of a tale about what happened in Rose Red before they got there.
Mm-hmm.
Right? We agree?
Yes. Yeah, no, she's having so much fun. She's just like in this room on such and such a night, like it's she's having a great time. They're fun scenes. And she really wants Annie, right? She does, like, because her entire theory of how haunted houses work is just the Stephen King theory of how haunted houses work, which is
she starts talking like Steve.
Yeah.
She's like, there's a battery. It's a dry battery.
Yep. And all I want is like one little twitch. We just need to get all these psychics into Rose Red. Let it, because Rose Red, by the way, has been closed for 30 years or something. They like closed it in the 70s because someone disappeared on a tour, and she was like, it was like the ladies auxiliary or something. And she wasn't the only person who disappeared in the history, but she was just like the one where they were like, okay, we're not letting anyone tour the house because The house is also the Winchester Mystery House.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just straightforwardly the Winchester Mystery House. Why? Okay. Because it's made by an oil magnate.
Yes.
He builds it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's kind of, it's built really for, and then eventually by his wife, his like young wife that he
yes.
gets, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they do like a honeymoon or something in Africa.
Uh-huh.
What happens to her there?
It is unclear to me.
She gets demon syphilis or something?
Yeah, it's it seems that she gets some sort of venereal disease. And then she is nursed back to health by a local woman who she then brings back to the United States as her like maid and companion, Sukina.
Yeah. And this is all like real horror literature of the 19th century and 20th century, early 20th century kind of stuff, right? Of like,
mm-hmm.
you went out to the imperial periphery, you got a mm-hmm. damn demon,
mm-hmm.
you got something evil, you brought it back.
Yep.
You might remember this from a little tale we call Hellraiser.
Ooh, yeah.
You ever thought about Hellraiser?
Mm-hmm.
Where that uncle was, you know? Think about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In that ethnic bazaar, getting that puzzle
yes.
box over there.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? So even in our most like genre of the genre kind of things, right?
Yeah.
If you ever play those point-and-click adventure games by the guy what make a show that yell about games, Yahtzee? You ever play his
point-and-click
adventure games?
Yeah, what were those called?
I don't remember, but they're
the Trilby games.
The Trilby games, that's right. And they're, bringing an African mask back.
Mm-hmm. And it's haunted.
It's haunted.
Evil.
But so this is all over, the genre.
Yeah.
Those games are pretty good, by the way.
Yeah, they were pretty good adventure games.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the thing about Sukina is that it's like she brings her back, but it's also ultimately sort of unclear, like, what happens in Rose Red with all of these people. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't know if Sukina being here makes any difference at all, ever.
It doesn't.
For what, right?
Yeah.
There's something like, all of these pieces get assembled that I'm not really sure, like, how they all, like, lock together to make the thing happen. But the thing that happens is, eventually, Rose Red, or, like, so Ellen Rimbauer spends her entire life dealing with John Rimbauer, her husband's, scandalous dealings in his affairs, and he dies mysteriously. He falls from like an upper story window, but then after he dies, or not after, maybe before he dies, at some point she becomes like involved with spiritualism, and she is told by a psychic that she will never die as long as the house is being built. And so she continues to build the house with her own funds, like forever, until she disappears into Rose Red, just as Sukina also at some point disappeared into Rose Red, and also like her daughter. Because Rose Red, that's...
It starts getting everybody, you know?
So that's the other like gender piece, right? Rose Red, like women disappear in Rose Red. Men just die.
Well, somebody's going to get zombified to do the work of the devil. What, women are going to do that?
No.
Grow up. You fool. but yeah, I actually like that. I like that Rose Red has like a personality. You know I like a haunted ass hotel.
Mm-hmm.
Who, Haunting of Hill House, who is it that haunts that?
They don't know.
They don't
it's
know.
Unclear. Like it was built by Hugh Crane.
Yeah, Hugh Crane. That's right. Right. That's right. It's a very similar thing to The Shining in that way.
Yeah.
Where it like preface that before Hugh Crane, there mm-hmm. was something going on. And then Hugh Crane is like the emblematic form of that in the way that like, what do you call it? Horace Derwent is too.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Or it's like, because like his whole thing, so Rose Red is built for Ellen Rimbauer by her husband, and it's like, you know, the wedding gift, and she shows up and she sees it. The incident for Hill House is Hugh Crane builds it for his young wife, and when she sees it for the first time, her horse bolts, her carriage runs into a tree, and she dies.
Awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, that's Rose Red. The big spooky house that is constantly. And so after Ellen Rimbauer disappears, that's when people are like, that it's and Nancy Travis says, that's when Rose Red grew on its own.
You know, that's cool. That's cool stuff.
Yep.
It does start growing on its own. And it's like, if you go in and count the rooms, it's different every time.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually, I mean, all right, let's do some little plotty plot skip stuff.
Okay.
There's a huge amount of the plot of this movie dedicated to the petty disagreements between the department chair and the professor, Joyce Reardon. Mm-hmm. They are very entertaining to watch. We do not have to talk about any of them because they have no bearing on anything else.
Yep.
Other than the fact that he sends Jimmy Simpson to die.
Yes.
To be stung by bees to death.
Uh-huh.
In the in Rose Red. And then he becomes a kind of like goblin zombie who's just running around the rest of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Doing Satan's work or whatever.
Yeah. Yep.
What else?
I mean, so
what
like,
else? What else?
The big structure, right? It's three parts. First part is introducing all of the characters. Who are they? And then get them to Rose Red.
Yeah.
Part two is we're in Rose Red. And we get to know each other a little bit more. We get to know like the layout of, actually, do they get to Rose Red by the end of the first episode?
No, they don't.
They don't. Okay.
I think the second episode begins with them like getting out of the car.
Yes, it does. Okay. Yes, that's right.
The first episode ends with them like finishing up the big presentation she makes where she tells about all the history of Rose Red.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. And so, second episode then is we're in Rose Red. We learn about the various rooms of Rose Red, so we recognize them when they come into play later. Character relationships having been established, grow a little bit more, get a little bit complicated, and then the scary stuff starts to happen, right? They start noticing weird things happening. It all escalates to the end. At the end of the second episode, that's when it is clear, like, the house is back in business. Like, it's like fucking with everyone. At least two people have, or like one person has already died. No, two people, because I guess we're going to count the evil reporter. Two people have died, and one person is dying. Vic, who the old man who has to take the glycerin or whatever, he gets like he's horny for Emily Deschanel, despite being an old man, and she disappears. She gets like doppelgangered into oblivion, and then her doppelganger shows up and is like, hey, like there's something cool you need to see, and she runs him out into the garden and scares him with her own corpse and then a statue that pulls off its face and whatnot. He has a heart attack while Emery refuses to let him in because Emery thinks that he is hallucinating because his mom has shown up because he's not answering the phone and he's heard his mom running through the woods yelling for him. And that's where part two ends. Part three is, oh my God, this is a nightmare. Everyone is going to run around and scream and die and escape.
In terms of the screaming and the dying, it's the least interesting part of the whole thing.
Yep.
Unfortunately. I more likely like it when it turns into some weird combination of House of Leaves and The Back Rooms and Skinamarink all at one time.
Yeah.
Like the section where Kathy, I guess, and what's his name, Julian Sands, where they find the actual like hallway being constructed.
Yes, that's,
you know,
so
they
cool.
They find this like evidence that carpentry has happened mere moments ago.
Mm-hmm.
The hammers are all from the 20s or whatever.
Yeah.
That's cool.
That is really cool. They like they're lost in the house. They're trying to find their way around, and they like walk into this room that is just in the middle of being built, like is under construction.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah, no, that was cool.
But a lot of it's like someone's running around and screaming, and like a puppet or. Jimmy Simpson with like a lot of stuff on his face.
Yeah.
Or a puppet that's made to look like Jimmy Simpson,
mm-hmm.
is menacing them from right off screen.
Mm-hmm.
And then they look at it and they go, oh, and we go, oh, and then it cuts to commercial.
Uh-huh.
And I think, you know, look, it's broadcast television, you know,
mm-hmm.
At the time that it is, you can only get so scary. And this is pretty scary for TV in 2002.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, there was some honest to God scary stuff. But, you know, it's not, I would not call it apex horror. It's mostly an apex, like, character study of these weirdos.
Yes.
And I like the weirdos. Do you think, because, as we're talking about a minute ago, right? Like, the big pitch is that eventually, because the house is evil, it convinces the lady of the house. What is her name?
Ellen Rimbauer.
Yeah, Ellen Rimbauer. It convinces her that the house, she will only die once the house is done being built.
Mm-hmm.
And so that ignites this kind of like psychic transformation, right? Where she is immortal because she's a ghost or whatever, the spirit mm-hmm. in that. She's the Horace Derwent kind of thing.
Yeah.
And because she is in there, anytime any psychic energy comes in, again, it's much like the Overlook Hotel, anytime it comes in, it like turns the engine on again and the house just starts building, mm-hmm. which brings her back to life, blah, 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 blah. And that's really fun. That's like a fun little idea. But beyond that, and hating demonic STDs, I don't know what the house wants. Does it just want to eat people?
It seems like it, yeah.
All right. I mean, that's fine, I guess. Hard to be too mad about an evil house, but...
Yeah.
It seems like for a long time that the movie is teeing up that Rimbauer wants something... Like, this evil spirit wants something else.
Yeah. Well, we do get her confrontation with Steve at the end, where it's like what she wants him to do is, like, resume, like, the family estate and, like, continue building.
Yeah.
Except it's like, I don't know if he means, like, become a ghost with us and do that, or, like, for some, like, turn this into, I don't know, loft apartments and help us eat all the people there.
This is good. This is a novel. Why have you not written this yet? Someone turned the Overlook Hotel into like a what do you call it? Like mixed use zoning.
Yes.
And you just get to write a little short story about all the fucked up stuff that happens in it.
Mm-hmm.
From like 2007 forward.
Yeah.
Until like the now again hollowing out of all that stuff.
Yeah.
It's just owned by an evil corporation in Saudi Arabia now.
Oof.
And it just, you know, and it waited, you know. The estates at Overlook waited.
My god, yeah. Mm-hmm.
OC, do not steal. I've written all these ideas down and I've put them in a self-addressed envelope and I'm sending them to myself. Do not steal them outdoors, other people. Because Steve, because he's like the heir to all this, he is going to sell it to real estate developers, you know, there's mm-hmm. that whole thing. Really kind of kicking off Poltergeist, you know, in the sequel, pretty clearly. But he was kept away as a child. Is the implication that like all the male heirs are kept away, not just because it kills them, but because it wants them to like do this?
I think
keep
so.
The line going. You got to marry somebody and bring them in.
Maybe. Yeah. Because like, yeah, they keep the son gets kept away from the house. And it's actually sort of suggested that is because, like, Ellen Rimbauer knows that it will, like, the house would eat her son eventually. Because it does take her daughter.
Yeah. She just disappears. That's a cool scene.
Yeah.
This is real. There's a couple scenes in here that are straight out of, was it The Reaper Shadow or whatever from?
Oh, that short story?
Yeah.
Or The Reaper's,
Reflect in the mirror.
You yes. know what I mean? Like yeah, I know what you mean. Uh-huh.
Some people see this little like wink in the mirror or whatever, and it looks weird. And then those people just disappear.
Yes. Yes.
And there's some that happens, I think, twice in this series or in this mm-hmm. show, which is cool. Mm-hmm. That's a cool idea.
Yeah.
Keep using it, Steve. I hope that's in the third Bill Hodges book. He looks in the mirror and disappears at the end of the book.
That's why it's the end of Watch. He's not watching anymore.
He's not watching his own reflection. I'll tell you what, Reaper got him.
Mm-hmm.
boss. Why? I mean, there's a lot of mechanical stuff in here that's like plotty plotty plot, but it's not particularly interesting.
Like, it's like, oh, here's a room that was built upside down. Here's the hallway that doesn't make any sense.
They get a lot of juice out of that. Again, that's a bunch of Winchester Mystery House stuff.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There's a subplot that happens in here where Annie, the psychic teenager, is in love with the guy, Steve.
Yeah.
And has a crush on him, but he is crushing on sister.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like when someone in a science fiction movie is named Janitor, you know? You're yeah. like, I guess you're just your job. Her job is sister.
Uh-huh.
You know, and so there's all this stuff, and like that generates all this like friction in the middle. Mm-hmm. Annie is also like keeping all the doors closed. They can't leave.
Yeah. Yep, until she falls.
Because she's an evil teen, I guess.
Yeah, it's like she went in. It's so funny because Reardon is like, all I want is a little twitch. That's it. Just a twitch. And literally, like, the second they arrive and are like in the fucking parking lot outside, Annie looks at the fountain and it just starts spurting water again. And then when they're doing the tour of the house 15 minutes later, don't they like, they like go into a, they like open a door and it starts screaming at them. And then Annie like screams it back down and they shut the door.
In some weird sequence, there's like a ghostly draft that blows a door closed.
Uh-huh.
Screaming door.
Mm-hmm.
That might be the same. I can't remember. And then giant orb of light.
Yes.
And they're like, ooh, we're getting some good stuff. We're done. Buster, right? We're going home.
It's like, why do we need to spend the night?
Oh, a werewolf might bite me in the ass. What are you doing? Don't do it. Go home.
You got what you wanted, Joyce.
You got it. Write the book. People have written a book about way less than that. I've read books about ghost stuff when I was a teenager. It was like one time I felt weird.
Mm-hmm.
You had a big orb. Everyone saw it. Go home.
Yeah. And so, I don't know. Is there like specific instances from the middle of this we want to pull out? Or
I don't think so. I don't think there's much. I mean, again, there's like a lot of like patient horror movie stuff, but none of it particularly interesting. I mean, I think you can kind of like take this movie, you could cut out a big chunk of stuff in the middle, just put in a bunch of random scenes from Graveyard Shift, you know?
Yeah.
And then pop back out here at the end. I don't remember why Annie turns on the hotel, or the, that's not a hotel, the
manor, house,
the house. I don't know why I can't come up with the word house. The manse.
She, what happens? Cause she's like,
I
that
don't
house.
Remember. Yeah.
Right. I think maybe, does it try to hurt her sister?
Maybe.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I honest to God don't remember. I'm looking I'm looking at an old piece of sepia tone newspaper from the basement. And I do remember the thing. So we find the aunt. Right? She's the corpse. Uh-huh. She's like the good corpse. I don't know.
Yeah.
Because she summons the boulders again.
Yeah. Annie prevents Ellen from coming after them. I guess maybe it's just because they tried to leave and all those ghosts were scary. So then she's like, bad house. And then she makes all the stones fall and crush Rose Red.
It seems bizarre that this is the case, but and this is why. This is why I don't remember very clearly for the viewer at home. The stuff that Emery gets up to in the last 45 minutes is some of the weirdest shit I've ever seen in a movie or a television show. And that really ate most of my attention.
Uh-huh.
Either watching Emery do the weird things Emery does, or thinking about the things that Emery was doing in front of me. Because so he kind of becomes like the protagonist at the very end.
Yes. He, like, that's his moment of growth. It's like when he learns to be proactive.
Yeah, because his mother is trying to kill him. The ghost of his mother tries to kill him.
His ghostly mother wants to kill him.
And he's like, no, my own mother.
Yeah, I'm looking at my notes here. Oh, yeah, something I think is very... So they leave Joyce in the house, and all of the ghosts come out of the walls, and they're, like, standing around her. They're, like, walking slowly toward her, and they're like, Joyce, being dead is wonderful, blah, blah, blah. And then they, like, fall on her as she, like, screams. Flanagan recreated that scene in Doctor Sleep when all the ghosts in the Overlook get Danny.
He does recreate that. That's true. That's why it looks so bad. Because he's recreating a TV movie from 20 years before. You're right. You got it.
Whee!
It's true.
Oh, yeah. We get a walking evil suit of armor.
I don't really care for that. When that appeared, yeah. I was like, all right, well, when's this going to be over? That was like the real moment. Because it's such a classic. It's, you know, like a Roger Corman-esque kind of moment. Right.
Where yes,
you're like,
it is.
All right. Well,
that I thought about. I remember Stephen King like dissing Roger Corman in like Dan's Macabre or whatever. And like, this is the most Roger Corman ass shit.
Yeah. Oh, really? And the go like you're just doing this. But what's really funny, I guess it's a little bit of like a turnaround. Right. Because what we learned is it's not a ghost doing it at all, Michael.
It's
a 15-year-old teenager. Who's me?
Yeah.
It's an evil child. I'm looking in here. I'm looking to see. This is written. The Stephen King got fandom.com wiki. Is written. The plot events of the show are written as a timeline.
Uh-huh.
I guess to include all the additional supplementary material.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Let's see here. Emery's attacked by his mother. Homicide. We already know that. Sneaks up behind Kathy. Stephen Rachel. How is... What's the name of the little kid? Annie or something?
Annie, yes.
Annie? Okay, here we go. Annie's like not mentioned at all. Annie, then you... Okay, hold on. Steve summons the courage to not accept the tool, which infuriates Ellen. I'm sorry. Hold on. Blah, 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 blah. Steve Rimbauer, the last Rimbauer alive, is then confronted by the rotting corpse of his great-grandmother, Ellen Rimbauer, who offers him a hammer to pass down her legacy to keep building Roseret. Steve summons the courage to not accept the tool, which infuriates Ellen. Annie then uses her telekinesis to rebuke Ellen and cast her spirit away when she tries to kill them. Oh, it's because she's crushing on Steve.
Yes. So the house was mean to Steve, so she turns on it.
The house was mean to Steve. I mean, who among us?
Yeah.
Wouldn't defend our crush from an evil house. Evil house comes after my brave wife? I'm tearing it up. I'm using my psychic abilities to smash that shit to pieces.
One other little interesting thing here. So there's a bit where they're like wandering around during the scene that you're describing, mm-hmm. where they confront Ellen Rimbauer's ghost in like the tower or whatever. There's a bit, they walk into the room and like the Ellen Rimbauer's daughter's corpse falls from the ceiling.
Yeah.
And like lands on them. And it's genuinely unclear what the fuck that means. Like, has this girl been like, she got disappeared into the rafters for 80 years and then the corpse just laid up there. But when I saw this, I realized like, oh, this is also Hell House. I'm going to spoil Hell House for you, listener, and for you, Cameron, but I'm going to tell you, Cameron, because I think it'll be valuable for you to think about maybe the effects that this leaves on Steve. Mm-hmm. But if you don't want to know truly, like, the end of the Hell House, which is a bit of a surprise, just stop listening, go read it or whatever, because I'm going to explain, like, what the kind of, like, big reveal is at the end. So I've already explained to you, Cameron. Hell House is the most haunted house in the world.
Yeah.
It is so haunted because the guy who built it wanted it to be that way. There's that, what's that? There's a Clive Barker story called like what, Come Down Satan or something. Do you know what I'm talking about?
No, I don't.
From Books of Blood.
I mean, I think I've read every Clive Barker story, but it's been a long time. Yeah. So I've read some of them.
Oh, it's like a guy who like doesn't believe in God. And in order to show how much he doesn't believe in God, and he's super wealthy. So he like decides to like build hell on earth in order to like spite God.
Yes.
Right. So it's like
down Satan.
Down Satan. That's it. Yeah. So it's kind of like that, where like Belasco is this, what if Horace Derwent from The Shining, right? All of his like fancy parties was also Hubie Marston from Salem's Lot. So like involved in some weird shit and also like the mob and all sorts like sort of vaguely supernatural, but probably con artist stuff. He was also known to be, for instance, he was like super tall. He was like 7 feet tall or something and very imposing. They find out. So at the end, they go into the house, all sorts of bad shit happens. There's ghoulies and ghosties everywhere. They like find a secret room in the house, and in it, the guy, Belasco or whatever, he disappeared. They find his corpse. It turns out he was the only ghost in the house. And he is just so psychic. And he like spent his entire life like feeding on the people that he was like ruining their lives in the house. And then he sealed himself away to be like the haunted house. And then they like kick his corpse over and they find out his legs are fake. He had his legs amputated so he could be even taller than he really was.
Hmm.
So anyway, I thought Steve was, I realized like, oh, Steve was like maybe teeing up to do that, right? That there's like the corpse of is still here and it's just like the one ghost. Nope, that's not what happens. It's just kind of like a thing that like presents itself and then disappears. I don't know why that corpse was in the rafters.
I think maybe that because like that big light shoots out of her too, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think part of what's going on is that she was tempted by the house to like be part of the house. And then she said, I will not be the house.
Mm-hmm.
And so she's simply dead because like that energy shoots out of her or whatever.
Right. Okay. That makes sense. I buy that. Okay.
That's all I got.
So yeah.
You know?
Okay. That happens. And I do think to say a little bit more, I do know because I watched all of the stuff, right? The special features back in the day, the production on the back half of this movie did get weird because David Dukes, the character playing the professor who was the rival to Nancy Travis, he died unexpectedly during filming. And so they had to rewrite the third act to remove a bunch of stuff that his character was supposed to do. And so I don't really know what that was supposed to look like. But if you're watching this movie and it feels like some things come unfrayed by the end, I think that's probably why, because they just kind of worked with what they had.
Yeah, had to make some stuff happen. Is the script for this published?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either. I mean, I guess we would have read it if it were a Storm of the Century situation.
Yeah.
There is some auxiliary stuff, the Diary of Ellen Rembauer.
Yes, you know, I've read that.
In a, what do you call it? Diary of Laura Palmer kind of situation.
Yes. And that is, in case you were wondering, that diary does explicitly confirm that Ellen Rembauer and Sukina are lesbian lovers. And you get to hear all about some of the stuff that they do.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, you know what we say here.
What?
This King Things is a show for moms. And she is a mom.
She is.
Whatever criticism you have of Ellen Rembauer.
She is a mom.
She's a mom. And even if her and Sukina did murder all those guys in their heart, she's still a mom.
That's right.
And doing all kinds of cool stuff, including, I guess, graphic lesbian sex, based on what you just said.
Actually, it's not so much graphic as it's very tasteful. It really opened my eyes to the experience of queer women. It's like very salacious. It's very goofy.
Yeah, of
course. Right. It's a tie-in novel. It's written by Ridley Pearson, who's like a crime novelist.
Let's see. He's got a real look about him.
Yeah.
He was the first American to receive the Raymond Chandler Fulbright Fellowship at Oxford.
Yeah.
That's funny. Let's see here. Blood of the Albatross. Killer Summer. Cool.
A couple of other, like, I don't know, production details things. The house that this was filmed at least partially, there's like a real house, and then they, like, you know, dressed it up, and then they did a bunch of like composites and stuff to make it look huge. But there's like a core part of the house that is like a real house. It's called the Thornwood Estate, and it's somewhere in Washington. And it shows up in various other movies. And so it's, you know, most of my life from 2002 onward has been like, oh, that's Rose Red. Like, I recognize the house. The other thing that I wanted to mention, because this is, I think, relevant, the idea for Rose Red initially began in, I think, the 80s when Stephen King and Steven Spielberg were talking about making a movie together. And they wanted to make the
Steves.
Yeah, they wanted to make the ultimate haunted house movie. And they apparently they threw ideas back and forth for a while. And eventually the project, like, it was a question of whether or not it was going to be a remake of The Haunting from 1963, which is the adaptation of Jackson's The Haunting of Hill House. Mm-hmm. The point is, eventually in 1999, there is a remake of The Haunting that is released that I believe Steven Spielberg produces. And there are a few elements of that, that even though King is not a credited writer, I recognize because they show up in other things, right? One of them in that movie is the Eleanor's mother has like a cane that she wraps on the wall with, and that becomes an element. And that shows up explicitly in a few Stephen King short stories. Hmm. And then there's also in that movie this bizarre like ballroom library thing with mirrors all over the walls that... And here in Rose Red, there is a mirror library. So there's like some, I feel like some of Steve's ideas got like written down, or one of the Steve's ideas got written down and the files got mixed up. So we got these like weird, like cross-pollination things happening.
Was there maybe like an evil piano that whipped someone in the face in a Steve?
No. That's pretty cool. That would be cool.
I like that movie. I like when Owen Wilson's decapitated.
That is so funny.
By an evil fireplace, right?
Yes.
I don't remember that being in the book, although it might have been.
No, there's not an evil fireplace in the book. Shirley Jackson didn't have the imagination.
That's right. Of a screenwriter from the 1990s. They didn't have enough cocaine back then.
Anyway, everyone like escapes, who lives, and then 6 months later, the survivors come back. Everyone's friends now. Emery tries to be nice to Annie. They lay roses in memory of everyone else, and then the ghost of Ellen and Sukina and Nancy Travis watch the survivors as they leave. And theme from a suburbs. Oh, we didn't even talk about this. Annie loves to listen to big band music.
Yes. Is that significant or is that just some Steve shit?
That's some Steve shit. She loves the song Theme from a Summer's Place, which I think I've rated on the mixtape. And I think I've rated it highly because I like it a lot. I love the kitsch. But she also likes Pennsylvania 65,000 and In the Mood. What I can say, and I don't remember the full details here, Steve wanted to give her a band that she really liked. I don't remember what one, but they went to the network and they were like, we are not licensing those songs. And so they just went with something cheaper, which was big band music.
Wanted to love Nirvana.
Yeah. I mean, it is Seattle.
Bachman Turner Overdrive. Bubba baby.
That scene where they have like their little party and like before everything goes bad, it's like their first night party where Steve gets his cameo as the pizza delivery man.
All right, listeners, put it in there.
Yep.
Change out the song with Bachman Turnover.
He looks in and he sees them dancing. And so yeah, they're looking, he looks in and sees them dancing to Bachman Turner Overdrive.
Yeah, that Stephen King cameo is really good.
Uh-huh.
Two pizzas. Door opens for him just fine.
Yeah, it does. It does. He comes right in. He's looking pretty good, honestly. Like, this is only 2 years after the accident.
Damn, he is looking pretty good. You're right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Something I was going to say that you were talking about that we didn't talk about. And we talked about big band music. Yeah, it creates a situation in which, like, 40% of scenes just have honks and whistles going on in the background.
Yeah.
Because, like, Annie's in the scene. Yeah. And, like, people are trying to have a conversation. It's... Can you imagine being, like... it's just a bad world in which you, like, have a kid who, like, falls in love with the soundtrack for this show.
Yeah. You know? Mm-hmm.
Someone falls in love with the soundtrack for Blade 2, you're loving it. You're experiencing the best music of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Rose Red?
Or even The One.
Or The One, yeah. Bodies are going to be hitting the floor. Just a rip. Not... You know, that's bad. We quit making it for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
If it were good, people would still listen to it.
It's music for haunted houses. Yeah,
it is music for haunted houses. Play some damn bebop. I mean, Steve really did get like a double run here in 10 years of having like big band music being really critical to the Stephen King, right? The Shining TV show.
Uh-huh.
And then this.
Mm-hmm.
Who's even gotten close like that?
I guess
I think that's it, right?
That's it. Yeah.
What are we doing next month?
What are we doing next month? Well, I guess we're going to be talking about the third season of Mr. Mercedes, about the second book, Finders Keepers.
I wonder how it's going to be. You think it's just, have you started watching it yet?
No.
Me neither. So I wonder if it's going to be just like straightforwardly, all right, Bill Hodges just happens to be in this one, but it's a completely different thing. Kind of like the book is, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Or I wonder if they're going to try to tie it in and be like, so they watch Brady get blasted in the head. And it made a certain inmate think about a guy he blasted in the head. You know?
Yes.
You can imagine right? that. I have not right. seen it yet. If that happens, people have to, you know, you got to send me a thumbs up emoji.
Bill Hodges like goes home, and after that happens, he's like, oh, I just really need to unwind with a book by my favorite novelist, John Rothstein. It's part of his Runner trilogy.
Wait, are we sure that like in his mind palace that Brady wasn't reading John Rothstein books?
I don't know. He could have been. He was making like a smoothies and shit. I'm sure he would have. He needed some time to read, to like sit and read. Yeah.
Think about it.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay. Yeah, that's what we'll be talking about. Thank you so much for supporting us at patreon.com/rangetouch. That's how you're hearing this. And if you want to help us out, maybe recommend us to someone else. As usual.
Like who?
Someone who's not already supporting us on Patreon.
A mom
or someone who is psychic. No, wait, don't recommend us to people who are psychic.
No, they'll get us in our dreams.
Yeah, they'll
get
us. Uh-huh.
They'll talk nice to us in an English accent. Oh, no. Oh, no. Don't do it. No.
No, no, no,
no. No, don't do it. Don't talk to me nice, Englishman. No. All right. Well, we'll be back in 1 month.
Mm-hmm.
Doing that.
And we're doing it for Steve.